Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin. So I very much enjoyed your episode 305 about MVNOs versus MNOs. We're talking about virtual mobile network operators or mobile virtual network. Is it MVNOs? I think the acronym always trips me up. Anyway, it was an interesting chat. And just at the tail end, Herman mentioned SIM cards and eSIMs, and that is actually something I was planning on asking you about as well. There is something extremely illogical about the fact that to get connected to a network in 2026, you have to wait for, as Herman called it, a tiny piece of plastic to come in the mail. Often has to be even couriered if you go for same day delivery, which is really obscene that someone has to drive through traffic in order to deliver a something that is literally less than a centimeter in length. It's perverse, you could say. Maybe that's a bit strong, but it's strange. What is very strange to me about eSIM, so I actually have never owned an eSIM capable phone yet, and therefore nor have I had an eSIM. But when my mother came to visit Israel for a while recently, she has an iPhone, and I was looking into whether we could take out what kind of SIM it would accept and whatever. And I saw that it had one, the second SIM card slot was, or I could take an eSIM. And I was able to find an eSIM plan and sign her up for a tourist eSIM and pay the month of, you know, subscription for that service. And within 3 minutes, she was connected. And it just made me think, why on earth are we still using SIM cards at all? Like, if it's really this easy, what's the point? SIM cards, from what I, or little I know about them, have a very, very small amount of data. The you know, about the person and their plan on the network, basically. But again, why is it taken until 2026 in order for eSIMs to still be to really sort of start making an impression on the market? And the other question I have, Herman and Corin, is, you know, eSIM capable handsets, right? SIM technology is ancient. It's been around for such a long time. And it seems if it really is that kind of very small little bit of data just to identify the subscriber to the mobile network, why do we have, like, why is it hard to, or relatively hard to find phones that are eSIM capable? Surely it's technology that they already have had for 20 years. And the final question I'll ask Herman and Corin, if you ask me what technology is going to be deprecated, or a list of things that will be deprecated or should be deprecated already, I would put the SIM card very high on the list. Is there any reason to think that the SIM card will continue to be a thing in the future? And if not, at what point do you think it'll be a fully eSIM world? Maybe we're just behind the times a bit in Israel. Israel's a paradox. It's very high tech, and sometimes, oddly, the domestic technology lags quite a bit behind, and we wait for, sometimes the most strange thing is when Israeli tech boomerangs, it gets sold to the US, it makes it big, and then it gets regulated back in Israel some years later. So maybe that's what's going on. But here, it's very much still the case that the mobile network operators have begun offering eSIM plans. But if you were to take a straw poll on the street of how many people have a physical SIM in their pocket or two versus an eSIM, you'd find that probably most people still have physical SIM cards or two. And that's the last thing I'll say. I mentioned before that I've had a dual SIM phone for probably going on 10 years now to do. I have one for my business line, one for my personal line, which I highly recommend to anyone who does freelancing or consulting. The ability to physically turn off a line when you have to disconnect is beautiful. But it actually does create a complication, because if I'm traveling in the US, for example, or anywhere, and I want to pick up a data SIM, I need to take out one of my SIM. I usually just pop out my business SIM. And that all seems a bit archaic. So again, coming back to the central question here, And especially considering this use case of roaming, it seems silly that we have that you'd even need to think of buying a 3-SIM phone. They do exist. Why are we swapping out little pieces of plastic to get connected to phone companies? And does the SIM card have any future, or is it due an overdue retirement very soon? Over to you, Herman and Corn.
You know, I was looking at my desk the other day, cleaning out that one drawer that everyone has, the one where batteries and old cables go to die, and I found this tiny, translucent plastic tray with a little piece of metal inside. It looked like a relic from a different century, like a piece of a spacecraft that crashed in the 90s, but it was just a nano SIM card from a couple of years ago. It is wild that we still carry these things around in 2026. Welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corn, and I am joined as always by my brother.
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. And yeah, Corn, that little piece of plastic is actually one of the most successful pieces of technology in human history if you think about it. It has survived through the transition from analog to digital, from 2G to 5G, and now into the early days of the 6G research cycle. But our housemate Daniel sent us a proc today that really hits on the absurdity of its continued existence.
Right. Daniel was telling us about helping his mom set up a tourist eSIM when she visited us here in Jerusalem last month. He said it took about 3 minutes from start to finish. You pay on an app, you scan a QR code, and boom, you are on the network. No waiting for a courier, no hunting for a kiosk at the airport, and definitely no fumbling with a paperclip to open a tiny, frustrating hole in the side of your phone. So his question is the one we have all been thinking. Why on earth are we still using physical SIM cards at all? Why has it taken so long for eSIMs to take over? And why is it still so hard to find phones that fully embrace it?
It is such a great question because it touches on everything from hardware engineering to the deep dark politics of mobile network operators. I have actually been looking into the history of the EUICC, which is the technical name for the eSIM, standing for Embedded Universal Integrated Circuit Card. And the story is much more about corporate control than it is about the limits of technology.
That makes sense. I mean, the technology for an embedded SIM has been around for over a decade, right? I remember we had it in smartwatches and some tablets back in 2015 or 2016. So if the tech was ready, what was the holdup? Was it just the carriers being stubborn, or was there a technical wall we hit?
Stubborn is a polite way to put it. Think about what a physical SIM card represents to a carrier. It is a physical anchor. It is a piece of their property inside your device. For decades, the SIM card was the primary way carriers enforced what we call friction. If you wanted to switch from one carrier to another, you had to physically go to a store, or wait for a card in the mail, or deal with a salesperson who would try to talk you out of leaving while you stood there awkwardly.
So it was essentially a physical manifestation of a lock-in strategy. If switching is hard, people stay. If switching is a button press in an app, the carriers lose that leverage. It is like the difference between canceling a gym membership in person versus clicking unsubscribe on a newsletter.
Exactly. There was a huge amount of pushback from the major mobile network operators when the GSMA, the global organization that sets these standards, first started pushing for eSIM. The carriers knew that if customers could jump between networks as easily as they changed their wallpaper, the price wars would be brutal. They would lose that captive audience. In fact, back in 2018, the United States Department of Justice actually investigated several major carriers for allegedly colluding with the GSMA to prevent the adoption of eSIM technology. They were worried it would make switching too easy and hurt their bottom line.
I remember that investigation. It is fascinating how a piece of plastic the size of a fingernail becomes a legal battleground for the Department of Justice. But even beyond the carrier politics, there is the hardware side. Daniel mentioned that it is still relatively difficult to find eSIM-capable handsets, or at least, it feels like it has taken a long time for them to become the standard. If you are an engineer at a company like Samsung or Apple or Google, why wouldn't you want to get rid of the SIM tray immediately? That is a lot of internal space being wasted in a device where space is at a premium.
Oh, you are preaching to the choir there. From a design perspective, the SIM tray is a nightmare. It is a hole in the side of the device. That means you need a mechanical ejector, you need a gasket to keep it waterproof, and you need a dedicated slot on the motherboard to read the chip. In a modern smartphone, where every square millimeter is fought over for battery capacity or larger camera sensors, the SIM tray is like having a giant empty closet in a tiny studio apartment. It is inefficient.
So if the engineers want it gone, and the tech is there, why the delay on the handset side? Is it just because they don't want to alienate customers in markets where eSIMs aren't supported yet?
That is a huge part of it. We live in a bit of a bubble here in Israel, and the United States has its own bubble, but the global mobile market is incredibly diverse. In many parts of the world, especially in Africa and parts of Southeast Asia, the physical SIM card is the basis of the entire mobile economy. People buy SIM cards from street vendors like they are buying candy. They might have 5 different cards for 5 different purposes, one for cheap data, one for international calls, one for a specific social media bundle. Moving those markets to a purely digital eSIM system requires a massive infrastructure shift on the carrier side that just hasn't happened everywhere yet.
That is a great point. It is easy to forget that what works in a high-tech hub might not work in a place where people rely on cheap, disposable hardware. But even here, Daniel mentioned the boomerang effect of Israeli technology. We develop a lot of the underlying tech, it goes to the United States and gets big, and then it eventually filters back here. Why do you think Israel was so slow to adopt eSIM for domestic plans? I mean, we only really saw the big carriers here start offering it for everyone in the last year or two, around 2024.
It is that classic Israeli paradox. We have some of the most advanced telecommunications research in the world, but the actual consumer market is heavily regulated and, frankly, a bit conservative when it comes to infrastructure changes. The Ministry of Communications had to step in and basically mandate that carriers support eSIM. Before that, the carriers were perfectly happy keeping the status quo because, again, it prevented easy switching. But once Apple decided to go eSIM only for the iPhone 14 in the United States back in 2022, the writing was on the wall. Manufacturers didn't want to keep making 2 different versions of every phone forever.
Wait, let's dig into that Apple move. When they removed the SIM tray entirely for the US models of the iPhone 14, it felt like a bold, almost aggressive move. But here we are in early 2026, and most other manufacturers still haven't followed suit entirely. Most flagship Android phones, like the latest Samsung Galaxy S26 or the Pixel 10, still have a physical slot in most regions. Why the hesitation?
It comes down to the safety net. If you are a manufacturer like Samsung, you sell phones in every single country on Earth. Apple can afford to say, okay, for the US market, we are going all in. But for a company that relies on a massive variety of markets, maintaining that physical slot is a way to ensure the phone works everywhere. Also, there is a psychological element. Some people really like the idea that if their phone breaks or the battery dies, they can just pop the SIM out and put it in an old backup phone. With eSIM, that process is still a bit clunky on some networks. You often have to go through an app or even call customer support to move your profile.
That is the part that gets me. The whole promise of eSIM is convenience, but sometimes it feels more complicated. If I want to move my eSIM from an iPhone to a Pixel, it isn't always as simple as scanning a code. Sometimes the old eSIM has to be deactivated in a specific way, or the carrier charges a fee for a new QR code. It feels like the carriers have found a way to reintroduce friction into a digital system.
They absolutely have. They are trying to turn a digital standard into a proprietary experience. But that is changing. The newer versions of the eSIM standard allow for much easier device-to-device transfers without carrier intervention. We are seeing more of that now in 2026. But I want to talk about what comes after the eSIM, because that is where it gets really interesting for the future of the physical SIM card.
You mean the iSIM? I have heard that term floating around in the tech blogs lately.
Exactly. The iSIM, or integrated SIM. While the eSIM is a dedicated chip soldered onto the motherboard, the iSIM takes that entire functionality and moves it directly into the main processor, the system on a chip. This is what Qualcomm and others have been pushing since 2023. When the SIM is just a tiny corner of your main processor, the physical footprint is literally zero. At that point, the physical SIM card doesn't just look old, it looks impossible.
So if we move to iSIM, the cost of adding cellular connectivity to devices drops to almost nothing. Does that mean everything will have a phone number? My toaster? My shoes? My smart glasses?
Maybe not your shoes, but certainly your laptop, your tablet, even small industrial sensors. The goal of iSIM is to make cellular connectivity as easy to include as Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. And that is the real nail in the coffin for the physical SIM card. Once you have billions of small devices that need to be connected, you can't be mailing out billions of pieces of plastic. The logistics alone would be a nightmare.
It is funny, Daniel's prompt mentioned that he has had a dual SIM phone for 10 years. He has one for business and one for personal use. He was saying how great it is to be able to physically turn off a line when he is off the clock. Can you still do that as easily with eSIMs?
Oh, even better. On most modern phones in 2026, you can store 8 or even 10 eSIM profiles at once. You can't have them all active at the same time, usually just 2, but you can toggle them on and off in the settings menu in seconds. It is much more flexible than having to carry around a little plastic case with all your different SIMs and a paperclip.
I guess the real question is, when does the physical SIM finally die? If we look at the history of technology, things usually linger much longer than we expect. We still have people using fax machines in some government offices, after all. Do you think we will still see SIM trays in 2030?
In 2030? Probably not on flagship devices. I think we're at the tipping point right now. By 2028, I expect almost all mid-range and high-end phones in major markets will be eSIM or iSIM only. The cost savings for the manufacturers are just too high to ignore. But in the ultra-low-cost market, the $10 or $20 phones sold in developing nations, the physical SIM might stick around for another decade. It is a very robust, very cheap way to handle identity without needing a complex digital infrastructure or a constant high-speed internet connection to activate a profile.
That is an interesting point about identity. The SIM card isn't just about the network. It is a security module. It is a tiny, secure computer that holds your cryptographic keys. Is an eSIM as secure as a physical card? Can it be hacked more easily since it is just software?
That is a common misconception. An eSIM isn't just software running on your phone's main processor. It is a hardware-based secure element. It has the same level of physical and logical security as a traditional SIM card. In some ways, it is actually more secure because you can't just steal someone's phone and pop the SIM out to put it in another device to intercept their two-factor authentication codes. If the phone is locked, the eSIM is locked.
That is a huge plus that people don't talk about enough. SIM swapping is a massive security problem. If someone gets their hands on your physical SIM, they can basically take over your entire digital life by resetting passwords through SMS. If that SIM is embedded in the hardware and protected by your Face 1D or fingerprint, that whole attack vector disappears.
Exactly. It is a massive upgrade for personal security. But let's go back to Daniel's observation about traveling. He mentioned the hassle of picking up a data SIM in the United States and having to take out one of his existing cards. That is where the eSIM really shines. There are apps now, like Aerolo or Holofly, where you can buy a data plan for almost any country in the world before you even leave your house. You land, the phone sees the new network, and you are online. No more hunting for a kiosk at the airport or worrying about getting ripped off by a local vendor.
I have used those apps, and it really does feel like living in the future. But I have noticed that those travel eSIMs are often data only. You don't get a local phone number. Is that a technical limitation or just a business model choice?
It is mostly a business and regulatory choice. Getting a phone number in many countries requires a lot of paperwork. You have to provide a passport, a local address, things like that, what they call KYC or Know Your Customer laws. For a data-only plan, the regulations are often much looser. But as the tech matures, we are seeing more travel providers offer full-service plans with numbers. It is just taking time for the legal frameworks to catch up with the digital reality.
It always comes back to the law and the money, doesn't it? The technology is ready to sprint, but the institutions are walking with a cane.
That is the history of telecommunications in a nutshell. But I think what Daniel is feeling, that sense of the physical SIM being archaic, is a sign that the culture is finally shifting. When regular people start noticing that a technology is inconvenient, the market has to respond. We saw it with the headphone jack, we saw it with the transition to USB Type-C, and now we are seeing it with the SIM card.
The headphone jack is a painful memory for some people, though. People were really upset about that. Do you think there will be a similar outcry when the SIM tray disappears entirely? Or is it different because the SIM card is something we almost never touch anyway?
I think it is different. Most people only touch their SIM card once every 2 years when they get a new phone. It doesn't have that daily tactile utility that a headphone jack had. The only people who will really miss it are the power users and the frequent travelers who like to swap cards manually. But even for them, the benefits of having 10 digital SIMs on one device will eventually outweigh the nostalgia of a little plastic tray.
I wonder if there is a second order effect here for the carriers themselves. If physical SIMs go away, do the carriers lose their branding? Right now, when you buy a SIM, it has the carrier's logo on it. It is a physical reminder of who you pay every month. If that becomes an invisible entry in a settings menu, does the carrier just become a faceless pipe?
That is exactly what they are afraid of. They are terrified of being commoditized. If the network is just a utility that you switch between based on price and signal strength, then the brand doesn't matter as much. That is why you see carriers trying to bundle all these extras, like streaming services or cloud storage. They are trying to find new ways to create that stickiness that the physical SIM card used to provide.
It is a fascinating power struggle. On one side, you have Apple and Google and the hardware makers who want to simplify the device and take more control over the user experience. On the other side, you have the legacy carriers trying to hold on to their physical anchors. And in the middle, we have users like Daniel who just want their phones to work without a trip to the mall or a wait for a courier.
And let's not forget the environmental impact. Billions of SIM cards are produced every year. They are made of plastic, they have gold and silicon in them, and they are almost always packaged in a giant plastic card the size of a credit card that just gets thrown away immediately. Then they are shipped all over the world. Moving to eSIM is a massive win for sustainability. It eliminates a huge amount of electronic waste and a massive carbon footprint from logistics.
I hadn't even thought about the environmental side. That alone should be a reason to kill off the physical SIM. Thousands of tons of plastic and metal just to identify a phone to a tower. It really is obscene when you put it that way.
It really is. And when you look at the numbers, it is staggering. We are talking about over 4 billion SIM cards produced annually. That is a lot of waste for something that could be a few kilobytes of data.
So, to answer Daniel's question, the physical SIM card is absolutely due for retirement. It has been kept on life support by carrier resistance and the complexities of the global market, but the momentum is now unstoppable. Between the hardware benefits for manufacturers, the security upgrades, and the environmental impact, the tray's days are numbered.
I agree. I think by the end of this decade, finding a phone with a physical SIM slot will be like finding a laptop with a CD drive today. It will be a niche feature for specific legacy uses, but the world will have moved on. The future is integrated, it is invisible, and it is a lot more convenient.
It is a bit of a bittersweet end for the little piece of plastic that could. It has been with us since the beginning of the mobile revolution. I remember my first phone, a Nokia, where the SIM card was the size of a credit card. You just slid the whole thing in.
Oh, the old full-size SIMs. Yeah, that was the standard back in the early 90s. We have shrunk it down to the mini, the micro, and finally the nano. But we have reached the limit of how small we can make a physical object that a human still has to handle with their fingers. The next step has to be no object at all.
From a credit card to a grain of sand to a ghost in the machine. That is quite the evolution. I think we have really dug into the why and the how here. It is one of those things where once you see the logic behind the change, the old way starts to look more and more ridiculous every day.
Exactly, and that is what we love about these prompts. They take something mundane that we all have in our pockets and reveal this whole hidden world of corporate strategy, engineering trade-offs, and global economics.
Well, I think that is a good place to wrap up our deep dive into the death of the SIM card. Daniel, thanks for sending that in. It definitely gave us a lot to chew on. And to our listeners, if you've ever struggled with a SIM card at an airport or felt the joy of a 3-minute eSIM setup, we would love to hear your stories.
Definitely. And hey, if you are enjoying the show and our little deep dives into the weird world of tech and life, please consider leaving us a review on your favorite podcast app. Whether it is Spotify or Apple Podcasts, those reviews really do help other curious people find us. We appreciate every single one of you who takes the minute to do that.
Yeah, it really makes a difference. You can find all our past episodes and a way to get in touch with us at our website, myweirdprompts.com. We are also on Spotify, so make sure to follow us there so you never miss an episode.
This has been My Weird Prompts. We will be back next week with another rabbit hole to explore. Until then, keep those prompts coming.
Thanks for listening. We will catch you in the next one. Sign off, Herman.
Goodbye, everyone. Stay curious.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.